Welcome to Wifeymole.com, the podcast hosted by me, Roger Lopez Bennett, a born dreamer. In this podcast, we feature young entrepreneurs who have founded their first startup before 30. Why? Well, because under 30 founders are rare and sometimes not taken seriously, but their stories are even more interesting than the rest. And before starting this episode, let me remind you that extra information about the speakers can be found on wifeymole.com/podcast. Enjoy! Yeah, and knowing this time investors came to you. Yeah, so besides this, in a normal situation, how do you find investors?
Through relationships most of the time. And when I was in Dublin and we wanted to raise a seed round, I was, you know, I knew a bit of a few startups in the market. Really, it's a small town. It's a small city. Yeah. So it's just next door, right? So you start to know people as you go to events and everything. So there are always relationships that work really well because you can ask for an introduction. Mm-hmm. But you can also look at, there are tons of sites that list investors and VCs in your city, right? Yeah. And that's easy to just prepare a pitch deck, send it to a few investors that you've selected, and even call them directly on the phone. That works well. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty, you know, well, it depends on different cultures, but I mean, they're pretty, you know, they're used to see a lot of new entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, and they're really welcoming most of the time. I'm not saying they're nice because they won't give you money, you know, like this, mm-hmm. but they're really welcoming and they listen to what you have to say. And that's great. And it's also a great way to connect.
It's basically your network. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like that's the easiest way, right? To leverage your network. And so absolutely. You started your first startup at 24, right?
24, yeah, I think so. 25, maybe. Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so that's still young. And so were you not taken seriously because of your age? You know, have you had any age-related issues?
I wouldn't say so. Okay. So most of the time I was considered as, you know, being a fellow entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And that felt good as well because there is no judgment, you know, on the age. And I worked with really experienced people, you know, that were 60, 70 years old, that were really, you know, welcoming as well, mm-hmm. very understanding of your inexperience in a way. Yeah. Because it's not really about the age, it's about the inexperience that might scare people and might scare investors, by the way. But, you know, as long as you show them that you're serious, driven, and that you have results.
Exactly.
The age won't matter, you know?
Results, yeah.
Exactly. And the age won't matter. I mean, look at what Mark Zuckerberg did when he was even younger than 24.
19, I think.
Yeah, he was, 19 or 20 or something like that. But it's quite amazing. And and it was investors chasing him, mm-hmm. you know, despite his young age. So I'd say, no, age is not a problem. And actually, starting as young as possible is actually a very good idea, in my opinion.
Because you have less responsibilities, I think.
That is true. Mm-hmm. And then you also have, less risk. And you get to learn a lot of things very early on. And even if you fail very young, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you would learn a lot faster and a lot quicker than those who start at 35 years old or 40 years old, right?
Yeah.
And that's a blessing.
Yeah, you know, the average founder's age in the US is 40 years old. And in Europe, I think it's 35. So, you know, it's kind of high.
I think it's getting lower
these
days.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, entrepreneurship is trendy as well since the last 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
Especially thanks to, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. again, who is a beautiful success story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think inspired a lot of young people, young students who basically want to do the same thing, right? So Facebook is one in a billion, of course. But, I mean, why not start early? I mean, there's nothing holding you back, mm-hmm. in my opinion. You know?
And... yeah, so moving to a fun part. I mean, yeah, let's hear it from you. But what's your biggest mistake?
Ah, man, my biggest mistake, that's actually not negative at all. It's positive. I learned so much from my mistakes, and today it's helping me every day. And my biggest mistake, I think, was once again spending too much time on trying to build a big product too soon, right? Mm-hmm. When I actually should have, you know, launched a product very fast and focus on user satisfaction, user feedback. And in my opinion, my mistake was not to get users on board as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe focus too much on the tech, right?
Yeah, I feel like this is a very common mistake, to focus more on the product rather than on the customer, the end user. Because, you know, you've been working on this for a long time and you think it's good. So you become blind to reality. And yeah, so you need to focus on what the customer really wants, right? Rather than just the product. And I don't know if you've watched, you know, Silicon Valley, the show.
Yes. Yes, I have. I loved it.
It's a pretty funny one. Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, back in season 3, I think, you know, when they launched the app, PyPiper, they sent the beta version, the invitations to their engineer friends. But but then it ends up not working, because, you know, they sent it to their engineer friends and not people in general. So the product wasn't prepared for the public, right?
Yeah, the product was too engineered. Yeah, I remember that part. It's a very funny show, and it's also very motivating, I think, this show, because it runs you through all the mistakes and all the hard the hard process of launching a startup, mm-hmm. and all the like the bad investors, the bad co-founders and everything. And it's a very good show. And to get back to the mistake per se, yeah, it's a very common mistake. It's the solo entrepreneur syndrome, you know, like you're in a room on your own, you think about the product, you think it's the right way to do it. And then you just give that to users, and they don't seem to like it. And you're like, it's really, it's really frustrating, mm-hmm. to build something and to think about it and to be very proud of it, and that you're only the only one at the end of the day, you know? Yeah. So get feedback really fast, and then build the product that the users actually want. That's the way to do it.
And knowing you've started, you know, startups in Paris and in Dublin, what's the best place to start up in the EU?
It really depends on the type of startups that you want to build and launch. I'd say Dublin is great for tech startup. It's really, the place to be in Europe, because of this atmosphere, the environment, the resources, the people, the advice, the tech investors as well. And then in Paris, you have, other advantages, like you have a bit more grants, for example, for starting businesses. And so there is no right and wrong. But if I had to bet on a country in the coming years, I would say probably the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a lot of liberty and freedom in the way they operate and the way they run the businesses and the way they help the businesses after, the Brexit.
So you think that's going to be good, Brexit?
I think that's going to be good for the UK. And I think it is actually quite good already. I see the pounds, increasing, the pound's value increasing. And I think they're going to reduce the tax rate, bring more investors in, and, maybe less, they will be a bit less open to the EU, but yeah. I think they will be more open to the world.
Okay.
For relationships with the States, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in my opinion, and that we'll see in a few years, right? But yeah, I think London is going to be the place to be in tech in the next few years.
I mean, yeah, it's, the UK is, I mean, London especially, is the European startup hub already.
Already,
So, yeah. And so, One of our last questions here. How do you roll a beta version out? Like, when do you decide your product or service is ready to launch?
Once again, the platform is ready to launch when it's with the less features possible. Usually for a beta, you're not happy with the platform you're launching. There is a saying that says if you're happy with the MVP you're launching, it's not an MVP, right? Because you're supposed to be to deliver to launch it as fast as possible, and then therefore you can't have everything perfect, right? And so the best way to launch the beta is as soon as possible, I'd say. And in regards to the users, I'd say it's a mix. It needs to be a mix of quantity of users and quality. So the number of users you bring in and how these users are relevant to your business. I saw recently, I spoke to two entrepreneurs. One had a beta testing phase with 100 users. The other one had a beta testing phase with 13,000 users, right? So it's enormous. And they were both, unhappy with the results, because the first one with 100 users said, okay, we had feedback with really good quality users, right? Really relevant, but not enough to know at which point it can scale in the future, right? And the other one was overwhelmed with, the 13,000 users. He couldn't manage 13,000 users, at first, of course. And he got a lot of feedback coming in. Sometimes the feedback wasn't relevant at all, and it made him miss out on the important feedback that would actually shape the future of the product. So I'd say a happy medium between, I mean, 500 users seems okay, but once again, it depends on each business. But yeah, it's good to have a limit and avoid, having too many users at first. And then, of course, when the product is ready and the beta phase is finished, let's move forward and scale as much as you can. But I mean, for the very beginning, yeah, I think it's not a good idea to have a lot of users.
Okay, and at what level or stage is Kudos now? Like, are you gonna scale a lot in the next year?
Oh man, we're working hard every day in that, to do that. And it goes through a lot of automation, because Kudos at the end of the day is an agency that builds products for, other startups. And it's still very human centric. And so what we can automate and how we can scale things is by, it's the processes that need to be automated, like, how do you have a scope of work? How do you generate, a quote for a client? How do you maybe a self-service kind of process? And that's what we're focusing on, and that's what will enable us as well to keep the quality that we can give to our clients. Because the problem with scaling is that you sometimes lose on quality, but we want to avoid that,
Okay, so our last question here. What's your goal in life and what do you want to be remembered for? Like I ask this to every single guest that comes to the podcast and they I think they hate it. But it's a pretty funny one, so.
No, I love it. I love it. Yeah, very great question, because it's sometimes we forget about the most important stuff in life. My vision and the vision of the company I run, Kudos, is to empower people. So that is to by building products for them very fast and very in a very accurate way of what they want. But it's also to help other people that are less fortunate than us, maybe build a new life, learn a new job, and help people in the streets, maybe get a house. And the way we do things is that low code is a great opportunity for anyone to learn a new job, learn how to code, learn how to build products, And that's what we actually do at Kudos. We train new people that want to learn how to become a low-code developer. And we onboard them and we give them a salary, we give them a job, and that will, that allows them to get a new house, get a family, live comfortably. A good example of that is our first employee that was a beekeeper still 2 years ago,
Wow.
and we met him a year ago. And now he's our first, I trained him in 2020, and he's our first low-code developer, And that's a
Wow.
beautiful story because he always was on the margin of society. And today he has a regular salary. He has a girlfriend. He's happy in his life, and we're really happy to have him. And that is our vision, and it goes beyond money. It's something we want to scale as well. We've proven that it works for one person, still the same approach. We want to scale this to 10 person, to 10 people, 10 and 100 people, and really build a community of people that came to us and that were less fortunate, and we give them a shot at life, a second chance, kind of,
Wow.
And that is what we wake up for every morning, and that's what drives us.
Wow, like I didn't know this part of the story, but that's actually very cool.
Yeah, it's I mean, what's the point of building a company if we don't have some social aspect behind it, and that's why I said, you need to keep what, to remember what's important in life and how you can really make an impact, positive one, on the world. And I think it's one of, it's one of them.
Wow, okay, well, that's cool. So, well, thanks, Ambrose. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us here at whyfamily.com, the podcast.
Thanks. It was great, being invited. And thanks again, Roger, for the warm welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, well, too bad it's over, huh? But don't worry, because next Tuesday we'll have a guest, and this time we'll stay in Europe. So, this guest is gonna be, I mean, yeah, I'm just gonna give you a hint. He's from the UK. And we'll talk about marketing. So, yeah, I'll let you listen to a snippet of it.
I think there's an absolute desire to get customers in, and there's a real appetite. And that's where all the money goes. If you think about when you talk about big numbers and you talk about growth plans, it's all about, well, I absolutely want to acquire new customers. They forget that actually, retain those customers, it will save you so much more acquisition money or acquisition dollars that you can be spending on acquiring prospects, true prospects, as opposed to reacquiring. So, absolutely, it's very much about the retention stage, and it's a different skill set.
Oh, well, that's all for now. Yeah, though, thanks a lot for listening. And please, 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 follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to this on or watch it. And yeah, thanks for sticking around. And now you can just go do whatever you were doing before. So either driving, cooking, or working. I love when you guys tell me or, write in the comments that even if you just have 30 minutes in your day, you decide to listen to this podcast. And this really means the world to me. So, yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a million for listening. Yeah, bye-bye.